This is the crucial point upon which immortality is a speculative question turns. Shall it be silenced in its claim on such evidence? Is there no higher tribunal, of wider powers and profounder wisdom, before which it may plead its eternal cause? Turn to that which is the substantial method of all ages, the necessary habit of the human mind, to philosophy. You now have the great question whether you are to be limited in your thought and belief by the dicta of natural science. In accounting for all things, are you shut up to matter and force and their phenomena? Science as positivism says, yes, because matter and force are all we know or can know. 35. Another school says, boldly, matter and force account for all things, thought, and will, and consciousness. 36. A position arrived at by still another school, which admits the existence of something else, but claims that it is unknowable. 37. If any one of these positions is admitted, the question you are considering is an idle one. So far as demonstration is concerned, it is even decided in the negative. 38. The antagonist to these positions is metaphysics. 39. Faith may surmount, but it cannot confute them without the aid of philosophy. And how goes the battle? 40. We think an impartial judge of this friendly conflict would say that metaphysics not only holds, but is master at the field. A. At least, science is speechless before several fundamental questions that itself has put into the mouth of philosophy. Science begins with matter in a homogeneous state of diffusion, that is, at rest and without action, either eternally so, or as the result of exhausted force. Now whence comes force? Science has no answer except such as is couched under the phrase an unknowable cause, which is a contradiction of terms, since a cause with a visible result is so far forth known. B. Again, there are mathematical formulas, or thought, in the stars and in matter, as in crystallization. The law or thought of gravitation necessarily goes before its action. What is the origin of this law as it begins to act? And why does it begin to act in matter at rest? C. A double question to which science renders no answer, except to the latter part, which it solves by polarization : but this is simply putting the tortoise under the elephant. D. Again, evolution, as interpreted by all the better schools of science, admits teleology, or an end in view, and the end is humanity. But the teleological end was present when the nebulous matter first began to move. In what did this purpose then reside? In the nebulous matter, or in some mind outside of matter and capable of the conception of man? E. Again, how do you pass from functional action of the brain to consciousness? Science does not undertake to answer, but confesses that the chasm is impassable from its side. What then shall you do with the fact and phenomena of consciousness? F. Again, what right has science, knowing nothing of the origin of force, and therefore, not understanding its full nature, what right has it to limit its action and its potentiability to the functional play of organism? As science, it can of course go no farther, but with an unknown factor, on what ground can it make a negative and final assertion as to the capability of that factor? G. Again, you test and measure matter by mind, but if matter is inclusive of mind, how can matter be tested and measured by it? It is one clod, or crystal, analyzing another, it is getting into the scales along with the thing you would weigh. 41. These are specimens of the questions that philosophy puts to science, or matter, as we prefer to phrase it, that one's mind puts to one's six senses. The observing senses are before the thinking mind. But these questions are universal and imperative. No further word of denial or assertion can be spoken until they are answered. H. Science might, also, be pressed into close quarters as to the nature of this thing that it calls matter, which it thinks it can see and feel. But how it sees and feels it, it does not know. 42. And as science does not answer them, philosophy undertakes to do so, and its answer is, theism: the universe requires a creating mind, it rests on mind and power. Metaphysics hold that field, and on its triumphant banner is the name of God. 43. When Sir William Thompson, led by a hint of Faraday's, advances the theory that all the properties of matter probably are attributes of motion. A surmise is awakened if matter be not a mere semblance, or phantom, and if force, or that which creates force, is not the only reality, a true substance upon which this play and spheres of unsubstantial matter takes place. A. Under this theory of advanced science, it is no longer spirit, that is seeming vague, elusive, unreal colon but matter, slipping away into modes of motion, dissolving into mere activity, and so shading off towards some great reality that is full of life and energy, not matter, and therefore spirit. B. Science itself has led up to a point where matter, and not God, becomes the unknowable. A little further struggle through this tangle of matter, and we may stand on a peak of Darien in wild surmise before the ocean of the spirit. 44. The final word which the philosophical man within you addresses to your scientific man is this: stop when you come to what seems to you to be an end of man, and for this imperative reason, namely, you do not claim that you have compassed him, you find in him that which you cannot explain, something that lies back of energy and function, and is the cause or ground of a play of function. You admit a consciousness, you admit that thought depends upon tissue, it is not tissue nor the action of tissue, and therefore, may have some ground of action. You admit an impassable chasm between brain action and consciousness. What right has science, as science, to leap that chasm with a negative in its hand? Why should science object to attempts to bridge the chasm from this side? Physical science has left unexplained these phenomena, may no other science take them up? Science left an entity, a something that it was felt but could not grasp, just as it has felt but could not grasp the ether. May not the science that gave to physics the ether, try its hand at this unexplained remainder? Accept no negative assertions, this is the bigotry of science. 45. But a generous-minded science will pass over this mystery to psychology, or to metaphysics, or to theology. If it is a substance, it has laws. If it is force or a life, it has an environment and a correspondence. If it is mind and spirit, it was a mental and spiritual environment, and if the correspondence is perfect and the environment ample enough, this mind and spirit may have a commensurable history. This is logical, and also probable, even on the ground of science, for all its analogies indicate and sustain it. Our conclusion is this: until natural science can answer these questions put by other sciences, it has no right to assume solution of the problem of immortality, because this question lies within the domain of the unanswered questions. 46. But has science no positive word to offer? The seeming antagonist of immortality, during its earlier studies of evolution, it now seems, in its later studies, is about to become an ally, in this, that man is the end or product that nature had in view during the whole process of evolution. When he is produced, the process ceases, and its laws either end at once or gradually, or take on a form supplementary to other laws, or are actually reversed. Thus, the struggle for existence ceases, and a moral, or human law of preservation, takes its place. 47. The secret of history is the dethronement of the strong by the weak, or rather, the introduction of a force by which the meek become the inheritors and rulers of the earth. Natural selection gives way to intelligent choice. Instinct ends, and thought determines action. The whole brute inheritance is being gradually thrown off, its methods constitute evil. This is the serpent whose head the seed of the woman is bruising and shall finally crush. 48. The imperative conclusion follows that man is not to be regarded as in the process, nor under the laws, nor even under the analogies of the order from which he has been evolved or created. The leaden suggestion of nature, as it destroyed the individual and the type, no longer is even scientific weight. Science itself bids you turn your back upon physical nature, or but look to it to find that you are no longer of it. 49. It is possible, indeed, to scale the heights of your hope, burdened with clay out of which you were made, but why bear it, when friendly science offers to take it off? 50. Besides, man is a logical being, and he cannot be induced to leave unexplained phenomena behind him, nor to leap chasms in his thought, nor will he build the heavenly city upon reason while it is confused by its relations to physical nature. So freed, you have man as mind and spirit, evolved or created out of nature, but no longer correlated to its methods, correlated instead, to contrasting methods, face to face with laws and forces hitherto unknown, or but dimly shadowed, moving steadily in a direction opposite to that in which he was produced. 51. Receiving man thus at the hands of science, what shall you do with him, but pass him over into the world to the verge of which science has brought him? The world of mind and spirit. A. From cosmic dust he has become a true person. What now? The end of the demiurgic strife reached, its methods cease. Steps lead up to the apex of the pyramid. 52. If man becomes no more than he now is, the whole process of gain and advance, by which he has come to what he is, turns on itself and reverses its order. The benevolent purpose, seen at every stage as it yields to the next, stops its actions, dies out, and goes no farther. The ever-swelling bubble of existence, that is grown and distended till it reflects the light of heaven in all its glorious tints, bursts, on the instant, into nothingness. The question is, whether such considerations are subjects for thought, whether they have in them an element of reason, that justifies a conclusion, whether they are phenomena, and may be treated scientifically, whether they do not address you in a way as impressively as physical science could address you, at any particular stage of evolution. 53. Having thought up to this point and found always a path leading through the improbability of the future, shall you think no longer because you face other improbabilities? You cannot, indeed, think facts out of existence. The world is real, but natural science justifies you in regarding man as under the laws of the intellectual and moral world into which it has delivered him. It has shown you the chemical, coming under the subjection of the dynamic, and the dynamic yielding to the organic, and the organic, with man in it and over it, a power over nature, under laws that are neither chemical, dynamic, nor organic, but creative, in their essence and spiritual, in their force. He is therefore to be measured, not by the orders behind him, but by that into which he has come. 54. The theory is often advanced that humanity survives, though the individual perishes. This theory, which is not recent, had its origin in that phase of nature which showed a constant disregard of the individual, and a steady care for the type or class. It found its way from science into literature, when it took on the form of lofty sentiment and became almost a religion. It is a product of the too hasty theory that you may carry the analogies of nature over into the world of man, and lay them down squarely and without qualification, as through they compassed him. 55. Science no longer does this, but the blunder lives on in literature, and in the everyday thought of the world. 56. But suppose it were true that the individual perishes and humanity survives, how much relief does it afford to thought? It simply lengthens the day that must end in horrible doom. The whole trend of the laws in social and intelligent humanity is towards securing a full personality, and a defense and perpetuity of it. Personality may not only reverse the law of selfishness, but it is the only condition under which it can be wholly preserved. If you remain a person, you can love and serve, you may be a perpetual generator of love and service, but if you cease to exist, you cease to create them, and leave a mere trailing influence thinning out into an unmeaning universe. 57. Such an altruism limits the use and force of character to the small opportunity of human life. It is so much and no more, however long it may continue to act. But the altruism of ideal and enduring personality continues to act forever, and on an increasing scale. The simple desire to live is neither moral nor immoral, but the desire to live for service and love is the highest morality and the only true altruism. 58. We shall not follow the subject into those fields of human life and spiritual experience, it being a beaten path, where the assurances of immortality mount into clear vision. Our aim having been to lessen the weight of the physical world as it hangs upon you in your upward flight. You cannot cut the bond that binds you to the world, by pious assertion, nor cast it off, by ecstatic struggles of the spirit, nor unbind it by any halfway processes of logic, nor by turning your back upon us attained knowledge. You must have a clear path behind you if you would have a possible one before you. See paragraphs 529, 536, 543, 547, 59. And the path before you is clearly set forth in this volume. If you will study its pages carefully, you will know the meaning and purpose and end of the seeming mysteries that have so long encompassed man. The Star Circle concludes this open letter at paragraphs 1142, 1191. Renewal of the Aberrant Intellectual Seances, Spring Hill, Kansas, June 26th, 1902. According to desire of the Star Circle of Spirits as expressed by the Spirit Dr. Reed in his last communication for Beyond the Veil, the work of holding seances, with W. W. Eber as a medium for obtaining matter for a second sequel to Rending the Veil, is being carried on at the residence of said medium and his wife, Sally W. Eber, in said village of Spring Hill. 61. Seance number 1 being held on above date with C. V. N. House and his wife, B. House, Joseph Simpson, Dr. E. J. Sukas, Mrs. Rilla McClung, Mr. Winspear, Mr. George B. Moore of Fort Scott, Kansas, and J. H. Nixon, forming the circle on the mortal side. The paraphernalia of the seance room is the same as described for the seances of R. V. and B. V., and in addition, a Remington typewriter has been procured for the communicating spirits to use, but no trumpet has yet been secured, though the spirits instruct that a trumpet be obtained as early as possible. 62. The reader should clearly understand that each item of matter contained in this book and attributed to any spirit was given by and through a full form visible materialization, unless the context states otherwise. A. That is, the communicating spirit, while communicating, stood before the circle so as plainly to be seen by all the members of the circle present at the given seance. 63. And so, on this occasion, Spirit Dr. Reed, the chemical control, first stood forth in form, neatly clothed in gentleman's attire, greeting the circle and the circle returning the greeting for a few moments, then Reed retired back, behind the cabinet curtains. 64. Immediately a form as of a lady dressed in white clothing, took a sheet of paper, placed it in position in the typewriter, and manipulated the instrument a moment, took the paper out of the machine and handed it to the secretary, asking, "Can you read that?" And these are the words of that first typewritten message, to wit, "A. Dear friends, we thank you for the paper." At a promiscuous seance, 2 evenings previously, the spirits had requested the circle to procure suitable paper for the work in hand, and Mr. Moore and Mr. Spear had procured the paper for the typewriter and spirit artist, and this explains the message. This is not a great quantity of message, neither was the first submarine telegram between England and America. But what did it prophesy? 65. Then the spirit, William Denton, stood before the circle, talking in quite familiar manner, and was asked by one of the circle, "Why is it that I have at times peculiar sensations in my arms with disposition to pantomime writing?" And the spirit replied, "A. In your constitution there are certain elements or forces, called magnetic and electric. B. Some have more of the one than of the other. And at one time a person may have more of the magnetic than of the electric, and at another time, the same person may have more of the electric than magnetic. C. A person, in perfect normal condition, has these two forces in equality, or equilibrium, and this is the case in perfect health. When out of balance there is some condition of disease more or less. D. Sometimes developing for mediumship finds these forces not in harmony for the phase desired, and an attempt to reduce to such relationship, as desired, produces unpleasant and even painful sensations, to the subject, and in this case, the peculiar pantomime and unpleasantness are due to an attempt to reduce these forces to the requisite degree of equilibrium." 66. The world has had different opinions about the life, but none of them have ever been proven except through this channel. 67. The world has always assumed, without question, that some kind of God, in person, is the author of all, the originator of all. But, as the light of this truth dawns upon the world, the gods vanish away. 68. When Denton had gone away, Dr. Reed appeared in visible form before the circle, took a tablet from the desk, passed to full view, in front of the circle, and standing erect, holding the tablet, open, in his left hand made motions over the tablet, with right hand as though writing, and when a page was written, the leaf containing the writing was torn off by the apparition, and laid upon the writing desk, until four leaves had been written upon, torn from the tablet, and placed upon the writing desk. Then, placing the tablet on the desk, gathered up the writing, handed the same to the secretary, and the spirit returned into the cabinet. The writing proved to be Dr. Reed's prefatory message, as follows. 69. In giving this work to you, we will endeavor to give that which we deem of most interest to the world. A. Everywhere the cry is, tell us something about how the spirits live, what they subsist upon, what their occupation, etc. B. We have been trying to enlighten the world upon these subjects, but they still demand more. 70. We have invited numerous spirits to be present. Many of these cannot give you their experiences in person, so we shall act as mediums for them. They have progressed so far beyond the earth plane that the gross conditions disturb them, and for a long time, they have carried their earth work on, through the medium of other spirits, who can still, without discomfort to themselves, enter the earth atmosphere. Their interest in earth affairs is as keen as ever, but the rate of vibration, as some would call it, is lower nearer the earth, and they cannot accomplish their work as readily as in their own element. 71. We who have lived in spirit life a number of years, understand that we are enabled to communicate with our friends upon earth, by means of a peculiar element in the atmosphere surrounding the earth, and we also know that, those who have advanced, on the spirit side of life, find it as difficult for them to visit you, as you find it difficult to rise above the earth. To be sure, they do not experience physical suffering, as you term it, but they experience that which, to them, is suffering. 72. We make this explanation that you may understand that, some are lower in spirit life than others, just the same as in the mortal form. A. Many brave souls are so determined that they will come in person, some equally as advanced, will send their communications through others, and by doing so will avoid all the unpleasantness. 73. If anyone in the circle feels, at any time, not to be in harmony with himself or other members, we ask, as a favor to the friends we have invited, that he or she will not enter the séance room at such times. 74. The medium will be oversensitive during the writing of this book, and we will be compelled to have him so, in order to accomplish the work planned. We therefore ask you to cooperate with us in making all things pleasant for him. Learn to know thyself and you will then be able to comprehend others. 75. You are not able at the present time, to see the good that will be accomplished by these books, but in the time to come, you will understand fully, why they were so much needed and will rejoice with us to know that, filling your niche, you filled it to the best of your ability. Signed, Dr. R. A. The foregoing writing was produced in very nearly 1 minute of time, and there are found to be 468 words in the writing. B. The manner of the appearance of the various spirits for recognition and entertainment of the circle, is so fully set out in Rending the Veil and Beyond the Veil, that such descriptions would be unnecessary in this book, but as it is expected that many persons will attend these séances, who did not attend heretofore, for further authentication the spirits desire that this record shall also fully set out important phenomena, as it will be necessary to produce them, for several reasons, spirits desire to learn the way and best means of keeping up their return, perceptible to mortals. 2d. To prevent too much monotony in the minds of the circle. 3d. To accumulate magnetism in the room from both sides of life, necessary to construct artificial form about the manifesting spirit. 4th. To intensify the spirituality of the circle so as to assist the scientific guides, to intellectual conditions, through which, to present to the circle, a grade of intellectuality at least, somewhat above the aggregate intellectuality of the circle. We may therefore anticipate at least as brilliant form display in the seances at times during present undertaking, as any heretofore witnessed, but in the record, we need only note that which may be of most apparent value. Seance number to June 29, 1902-76. Present C. V. N. House and wife, Joseph Simpson, Dr. Sahas, Mrs. McClung and J. H. Nixon. Minutes of previous meeting being read, the circle repaired to seance room. Medium entranced, phenomena began with Dr. Reed appearing and requesting secretary to make record of seance proceedings in full detail. A. Then, a spirit, James Saunders, appeared at the writing desk, took from the desk a tablet, but seeming not to find a pencil, made inquiry for one, and Dr. Reed informed him that he would find a pencil at a certain point in the writing desk. The spirit looked and found, as Dr. Reed had told him, and proceeded to write very slowly, perhaps not so much as 200 words per minute to the number of 387 words, and while tearing the fourth leaf from the tablet, said, "All right, I will write for you." And this stranger spirit went into cabinet as Dr. Reed came out, 83A, and the stranger dictated in loud whisper and the doctor wrote the dictation to three sheets more, of 376 words, in continuation of the subject matter begun by the stranger spirit, and here follows the whole writing, to wit, 77. I, James Saunders, was a landscape gardener upon earth, and became so interested in nature's beauties, that I have continued my studies in spirit life. Some will say, how can you in spirit life? I answer, far more easily than in the earth life, as I have unlimited time and space at my command. 78. It has always been my great pleasure to work out my ideas in the spirit world and then impress them upon receptive ones of earth. 79. The study of nature is elevating. Nature is the universal teacher. She is the mother of all knowledge. Someone watching a fish swim, saw, in its tail, a ship's rudder, and made possible the navigation of the seas. A. Another, watching a busy woodpecker, discovered an instrument for sounding the heart. Art received its first impulse from the beauty in nature's lines. 80. How many of the beauties of architecture and decoration are based upon flower forces? All progress comes through man's observation. There are lessons yet to be learned. He who studies nature in her varied aspects, in her beauty, in her truth, learns to be observant, to progress. 81. I have had a pet scheme for years for the benefit of humanity, but have never been able to impress it, as I wish, upon the individuals I have been impressing upon the earth. When this opportunity was offered me, I accepted at once, and I now see a faint chance of giving to the world something, I feel, that will be of lasting good. 82. After years of careful observation, I have learned that no matter how much one is developed intellectually, there is still a feeling, that cannot be resisted, that the earthly bodies of their friends must be held sacred. It is like cherishing the beautiful vase that holds your cut flowers. This impulse seems innate in man, woman and child. Some have advanced in thought, until they have reached a point where they will consent to the cremation of their bodies. Then the question arises, as to what they shall do with the ashes. I will endeavor to solve the problem for them. 83. Let each city purchase one or more plats of ground, according to its size, but let them be located where the poor, as well as the rich, may enjoy their beauties. A. Have skillful hands and gardeners lay these out in beautiful flowerbeds and walks. When practical, have small lakes, as some of your most interesting plants and flowers grow in the water. Erect a crematory where the bodies may be reduced to ashes. Let persons lease, or purchase, flowerbeds and bury the ashes of their friends there. Have no unsightly mounds or headstones. Those who are financially able could have beautiful statuary among the flowers, and if so desired, could place the names of their friends on the base of statues. The names, no epitaphs. Those not able to purchase statues, could have low marble or stone borders for their flowerbeds, and the names of loved ones could be inscribed thereon. I would prefer to call this a park, and not a cemetery. Have plenty of beautiful trees, where the songbirds may flit from branch to branch and warble songs of joy. Let numerous fountains be scattered over the greensward. Have swings for the little ones, and seats where the weary may pause and rest and study nature.